The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So again, a really warm welcome to everyone. And on the winter solstice, I guess there are a number of astrological events happening today. And it's a little bit odd. I was reflecting how this year, it's felt off kilter in so many ways. I was reflecting on how I felt some reassurance. The planet still has the same tilt. And the planet is still going around the sun in the same way. So wishing everybody a nice solstice, winter solstice. So today I'd like to continue on the series of talking about the five faculties. I have to admit that when I did the first talk on the five faculties, I found it really interesting and didn't imagine that I'd be doing such a series on them, but the more I practice with them and think about them and read about them in the suttas and what some other Dharma teachers have said about it, the more interesting and more alive and they've become. So there's a third talk where I'd like to offer maybe just one more way in which we might engage or consider the five faculties. For those of you who don't know, the five faculties are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And they're usually given in that order. Most of the Buddhist lists are given in a particular order. And sometimes there's some meaning that's given to the order. And in a preceding talk, I think it was last week, I talked about, faith is first and wisdom is last. And one way we might consider the five faculties is this movement from faith to wisdom that moves through energy, mindfulness, and concentration, which some of you might recognize is the mental development group within the Eightfold Path. Sometimes we have sila, samadhi, panya, ethics, mental development or concentration, panya or wisdom. Sila, samadhi, panya is this abbreviation or maybe organizing the path of practice into three buckets. And the samadhi has energy or effort, mindfulness, and concentration, and so does the five faculties. So we might consider this idea that practicing with the five faculties, or all practice, in fact, is a way of transforming faith into wisdom. And last week I talked a little bit about one way to do that is to have heedfulness, sometimes translated as diligence or vigilance. And in the first talk on the five faculties, I talked about how cultivating the five faculties creates the conditions on which slants, inclines, and slopes towards awakening, just like a river, the Ganges River, slants, slopes, and inclines towards the ocean. So with all these ideas, there's an emphasis on developing and cultivating the five faculties. And they can be, sometimes it's just a natural development in which they unfold in our practice. For example, with a little bit of faith, we're willing to make a little bit of effort. And with a little bit of effort, we're become a little bit more aware of what's happening in the present moment. And then when we're a little bit more aware, then the mind gets collected. It gets a little bit more unified. When the mind's a little bit more unified or collected, then we can see a little bit more clearly. And then when we can see a little bit more clearly, we start to understand what's really happening, and there might be some insights that arise. And when we have a different understanding of what's happening and some insights arise, there's a little bit more faith. Oh, yeah, so some of these Dharma teachings that I've heard about, read about, get verified, or they make sense in a different way, so then we're willing to apply just a little bit more effort. And then there's towards applying our mind to what's actually happening, some increased mindfulness, and there we go. So in this way, cultivating the faculties can just be a natural unfolding. Maybe it's not something that we have to emphasize. But there's also a recognition that we can get out of balance if we're always or often emphasizing you have to cultivate, you have to develop the faculties. And to be sure, there are plenty of sutta passages that emphasize effort or energy or diligence, and there's lots of different words and different ways that this idea gets expressed. And of course it's true, just like if you want to learn anything, learning to water ski or practice the piano or some new video game, whatever it might be, right? We have to apply some amount of effort. And of course also we are a pragmatic and goal-oriented culture, I would say, in general. We put effort into our jobs, our education, maybe even our vacations, our leisure time. And in response to that effort, we generally expect results. We're not just putting in effort for absolutely no sake, for no reason. We expect that there to be particular outcomes. But when it comes to spiritual practice, it doesn't become as predictable what the results are going to be. And it's perfectly natural that we bring from our daily life, our waking life, our the way that we've been in the world, that if things aren't turning out the way that we expect or want them to, we just have to try a little harder. But then this can really easy get to some overstriving, some straining. We get a little bit out of balance. And in fact, that can stall and get in the way of our spiritual practice. So there's this story that the tradition holds of Ananda. Many of you may know that he was the attendant of the Buddha, and he's a really dear character or person in the suttas. I have a soft spot in my heart for this person, Ananda. So after the Buddha died, there was a collection of the senior members of the Sangha that were going to get together and recite the teachings, the Buddha's teachings, to save them, preserve them. But a prerequisite for to be able to attend to this meeting to talk about the teachings was you had to be fully awakened. You had to be an arhat. As an aside, I kind of like this idea that it's a bunch of completely awakened people that are getting together to preserve the teachings. And Ananda had been the Buddha's attendant, had heard so many of the talks, so of course, and he had this tremendous memory, so of course they would want him to be there, but he wasn't an arhat. He wasn't completely awakened. So on the night before this meeting, the first council, he strives and he strains to become awakened. And he meditated strenuously and did everything that he knew how, just really, really trying really hard to become awakened. He wanted to attend this meeting. But try as he might, he could not. He couldn't become fully awakened. He couldn't make this breakthrough to being an arhat. So he decided to just go to bed, to lie down and sleep. And then the story is, the tradition holds this story, that as he sat down on his bed and picked up his feet, but his head had not yet hit the pillow. So just that particular moment, he becomes awakened. Right when he's relaxing after all this strenuous effort, right when he lets go of that effort, is when he becomes awakened. So this is a way that kind of points to that there needs to be a certain amount of effort, but if there's too much effort, we can't become awakened. We can't have the insights. Instead, we get tight and tangled up. And I've heard stories from a number of different meditators, and I myself have had this experience that there's something like when we're sitting down and really, really trying in some way, kind of really striving, then there's just like a headache or a feeling of being disappointment and frustration and, you know, things that are the opposite of well-being and spaciousness. But then it's maybe with the transition of going to walking meditation, if it's during a retreat, or maybe there's some kind of saying, okay, this isn't working, I've got to try something else, some kind of shift, is when there can be this movement of going forward. So with the regarding to the faculties, I'm pointing to that we can talk about cultivating the faculties and moving faith towards wisdom, but we can also talk about a way to cultivate the faculties is to have them in balance. And there's this story that I've heard from a number of teachers. I'm not sure if it's in the suttas or not. But this a simile of a charioteer with four horses. And there's like two pairs of horses. And one pair of horses have faith and wisdom. And they are, I'm sure there's a technical term for it, I'm not sure what it is, but they are connected, these two. There's a you know, something that connects these two horses. And then there's the next pair that are energy and concentration, and they're connected. And then the charioteer, the one who's setting the pace and guiding where the horses go, is mindfulness. So energy and concentration to be balanced, faith and wisdom to be balanced. And this visual, this simile, uses our imagination, but in a way that maybe helps us to understand things in a different way than if we just talk about it. Somehow, it might be that this image, I know that I've used this actually sometimes in meditation, just this fleeting kind of like image of having four horses trotting together. And mindfulness that's keeping an eye out of where we're going and what we're doing. So it might be that there is a way in which, you know, the Buddha, of course, used so many similes. He was a master at similes. It's really impressive. But they're very effective as a way to learn something, to remember something, and to engage with something in a way that uses more than just our thinking. Maybe it uses our visual sense or something like this. So the simile of the charioteer. But the simile of the charioteer is one in which can help remind us to support these different elements of the five faculties. But there's some other similes that we might use. And one is the simile of the citadel for energy. Going to kind of describe the way that we might consider or think about energy. And it goes like this. And maybe I'll say that, remember that this was thousands of years ago in a particular cultural milieu, and the Buddha's teaching in a way that was relevant for those times. So it may not be relevant. In fact, specifics may not be relevant today, but what's being pointed to, and maybe we can change some of the ideas around it. So, this is the simile of the citadel, a fortress that protects a city, and the simile the simile of the citadel for energy is just as many kinds of armed forces reside in a citadel, such as, and here's a really long list, maybe I won't read them all, but elephant riders, cavalry, charioteers, archers, bannermen, assistants, food servers, warrior chiefs, princes, chargers, heroes, soldiers, on the list goes on. In the same way, a noble disciple is energetic, just like there's these armed forces that reside in a citadel. We might, use a different example. For example, maybe just like if you were to run a retreat center, there would be the registrars and the kitchen mentor and the managers and the yogis that have 40 different jobs. If you go to IRC, there's 40 different jobs, and there's the teachers, and then there's the website designer for the that allows people to know what's happening for a retreat, and online retreats, there's Zoom people that are managing the Zoom, I think you understand, right? There's so many different disciplines, so many different skills and expertise that come together, and they have very different jobs or different tasks. So in the same way, energy is kind of like this, that there can be this movement, well, to do this particular task, or I want to do that particular task, or I'm going to do this. Just in the same way, we have that inside of us too. And maybe even it feels like we have a whole committee that wants to have different things. I want to eat yummy things, but I want to eat healthy things and not too much sugar. But, I think we all have this experience. So energy is a way in which there's can be this sense of wanting to do something, get things done. But it may not be completely organized or prioritized, but instead this can be this committee of workers, this group of workers inside of us. So the way that this might show up in our practice was maybe if there's excess energy, there the mind can feel a little bit buzzy or restless or agitated or jumpy or strained or tense, irritable. And energy and effort sometimes are used synonymously in the suttas. And we might say that if there's too much effort, it can be a real sense of this activity having a feeling of frustration, a little like, dang it. That kind of an attitude that may not be obvious, that's just like behind the scenes, kind of like pushing the whatever it is that we're doing. There's a wanting it to go better or faster, or maybe this idea of like pushing the river, this kind of an idea. And so there's a way in which there can be too much energy, there can be too much effort, and it's not balanced. And in the same way, there can be insufficient energy, and we probably all of us are familiar with this too, a sense of dullness, a sense of just tiredness, and sense of just not being willing to be with what the experience is. So working with the five faculties, there can be a way in which the working the energy is balanced with concentration. So when there's a little bit too much energy, it can bring in some concentration. Or when there's not enough when there's too much concentration, we can bring in some energy. And the simile for the citadel for energy, I'm sorry, for concentration, has: just as a king's frontier citadel has much hay, wood, food, water, and medicine stored up for the enjoyment, relief, and comfort of those within. So in this way, those within, we heard in the earlier part of the simile, are the armed forces of where the energy is going. But it's interesting here to really note that the concentration is likened to hay, wood, food, and water. That's for the enjoyment and comfort of those within. So concentration is a way in which we consider it as a way of having some well-being, some collectedness, some connectedness, some unification. Sometimes when we hear this word concentration, it just automatically triggers a sense we have to strive and strain or something like this. When I do that, my shoulders go up when I say those words. But concentration really requires a sense of well-being, a sense of ease, a sense of happiness, in order to really blossom. So it's a way in which we can apply our energy and our effort to allow there to be some spaciousness and some collectedness and non-distraction or non-fragmentation. It's a way of kind of like opening up and allowing different parts of our experience, our energy, to kind of like just to come and land here. So I think we all have this experience when there isn't enough concentration. It might be that it's when the mind just can't quite land on any object. It can't stay with it. Or if there's a little bit the wrong kind of concentration, it's when there's a sense of our experience being really fragile and brittle, and there's a sense of like, go away, I'm trying to get concentrated here. There isn't a sense of well-being. There may be a sense of really being on the object, and there might be a sense of being connected to the breath, for example, but it's done with a real sense. There isn't any ease or any spaciousness. It's really tight and brittle. But when energy and concentration are in balance, there's a feeling of spaciousness and ease, and the experience has a sense of naturalness and clarity, and it's maybe gentle and broad and rich and subtle. Use these kinds of words to describe the experience when energy and concentration are in balance. And often that shows up when the posture, certainly in the first part of concentration, but later in some of the later jhanas, it might be that there's some leaning forward. But just in the beginning, when there's some settling of the mind, there often is the energy rises up and there's a certain uprightness to the posture, and it's balanced and steady. And the mind has a certain amount of brightness and a certain amount of focus without being heavy-handed or without being like a sledgehammer on the objects, but maybe just a lighting on the objects. And so finding this balance really takes time, and it takes some adjustments, and it takes maybe some willingness to spend some time to notice that if there's too much concentration and not enough energy, then we might feel, there might be a sense of like, oh, I'm finally connected to the breath. I'm able to be with a number of breaths in a row. But then that there might be a sense of fogginess or disconnection, or what's sometimes it's called sinking mind, that it's, you just kind of like sink into this fluffy, cottony space. And I've certainly spent my time in this experience where there's no brightness, there's no like sense, I'm looking around, there's no sense of possibility. It's more kind of a sinking mind is actually how it feels, kind of like being sinking and sunk when there isn't enough energy. And so one way to kind of increase the energy is to bring a little bit of investigation. What's going on here? It feels foggy and cottony and fluffy, but I also feel stuck and I can't see clearly. There's no brightness. It's like the lights are dimmed. And then just that act of investigation can bring the energy up. If we have too much energy and not enough concentration, so maybe there's a sense of restlessness, there can be a way in which we might open up our awareness so that there's a... I heard Gil use this simile before, which I found to be really helpful. It's as if you're in an elevator with cramped in the elevator with all kinds of people, and they're really big people, really tall, and you feel kind of like diminished in them and surrounded by them, and you feel stuck in some kind of way. And then this elevator door opens and opens into a cathedral. Big, beautiful cathedral with really high ceilings, really space. And all of you get out of the elevator and move into the cathedral. So imagining like this spaciousness. And that's one way in which when there's a lot of energy and then but to create some spaciousness can help there be some more concentration, some more ability to be connected to the experience and to have the energy and concentration a little bit more in balance. So balancing the faculties. We talk about cultivating them and developing them. But sometimes with that emphasis, there might be a little bit too much effort, a little bit too much energy, and we can balance them. And maybe in another talk, I'm not sure it'll be the next one, but another talk, I'll talk about balancing faith and wisdom. But for now, I'd like just to wish you all as we're bringing this holiday season is here and bringing 2020 to an end, just wanting to wish you all happiness and well-being. And may you find balance in all different areas of your life. And may your practice support you. Thank you.